And good morning. You're listening to the 88.5 KRFY Morning Show, and I'm your host, one of your hosts, Susie Prez.
And I'm your co-host, Susie, Chris Bessler.
It's always nice to have you here, Chris, and good morning, good morning.
Yeah.
We have special guests in the studio. We have Dan Hall. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Susie.
And Jackie Albright. Good morning, Jackie.
Good morning, Susie.
And they are here from the Sandpoint Historic Preservation Commission. And we'll get to that discussion coming up. But first, we're going to have a few bits of information. And how about the weather today? Does everyone want to hear what's going on there?
Yes. Tell us, Susie.
Okay.
We can hardly see from in here.
We do have a skylight, and I see blue skies. So anyways, currently from the National Weather Service, it's 48 degrees. We can expect mostly sunny skies with highs near 64 today. Southwest winds 8 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with lows around 36. Southwest winds 6 to 11 miles per hour. I wonder why it's not 10, but anyways, 11. Becoming light and variable in the evening. Tomorrow, okay, here we go, 20% chance of showers. Partly sunny with highs near 61. Calm winds becoming southwest around 5 miles per hour. Mostly cloudy with on Wednesday night, mostly cloudy with lows 36 and clear. And then the rest of the week looks sunny. So that's good enough for me.
Yeah. Well, actually, we might get into a situation where we're wanting some rain with the little snowpack we have this year.
Mm-hmm.
Sunrise this morning was at 5:20 a.m. Sunset will be at 8:05 p.m. That means we've gained about 22 minutes of daylight in the last week as we are approaching the summer solstice. The full moon was full on Sunday. It's going to be 97% full tonight. It's waning now. And the moonrise will be at 9:48 p.m. The lake is rising. It's up about a foot in the past week to 20.55.7, and it's projected to rise about another foot as they're filling the reservoir up now. And on our rivers, the Priest River is flowing at 1,740 CFS. It's actually down about 600 CFS. That's because they've started filling up Priest Lake, which controls the flow on the Priest River. The Moye River is at 1,410 CFS. It's up about 300 CFS. Actually, pretty good white water to be had on the Moye right now.
Mm-hmm. I saw some pictures on Facebook of people rafting and kayaking down the Moye.
Yeah, yeah. It's really a fine whitewater run, actually.
Mm-hmm. And people are also, I did see some people out in canoes on the lake, so the water's coming up.
Yeah.
Time to get those kayaks out.
Yeah, it sure is. It's we're well into spring now.
Do you want to say anything, Chris, about the finals on the fishing derby?
Yeah, I'm dying to let you know about that. Actually, we have the same. The winner was the same fellow that caught the largest fish on the first weekend, Derek Blanchard. He won the rainbow division with a 21.16 pound. Rainbow or Kamloops. That's a very big fish. Yeah. In the Mackinac division, Ed Dixon won with a Mackinac that weighed 23.58 pounds. And they call it the Kamloops and Kokanee Derby, the K&K Derby. The Kams are these big old rainbow. The Kokanee are the little landlocked sockeye salmon. And not very many people fish for the Kokanee. There's actually only one entrant for that was Scott Plew. His Kokanee weighed 0.54 pounds.
It's a little fish.
And he won with that. So,
he won. Aww.
So for those that like to fish and win things, I'd suggest trying for Kokanee next year.
That would be really
year.
Fun for kids.
Yeah.
Because they have a chance.
Well, actually, the Kokanee are not that easy to catch.
Oh, okay.
You got to be out in the middle of the lake and trolling some special gear, actually, to catch Kokanee as well. Well, you can catch a lot of them, but you had to be geared up for it.
So that little 0.5 fish, he had to go back in, didn't he? I mean, was that big enough to catch?
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's legal size. It's about 12 inches. And actually, kokanee, they are a salmon, and they're excellent eating. They taste like salmon when you eat them. So
good to know.
Yeah. Other things going on around town. Did anybody in the room catch the Charlie Packard tribute concert on Friday?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It was beautiful.
It was Old Home Week.
Huh? Yeah, it was Old Home Week. It was a sellout, and it was a whole bunch of local musicians playing songs that Charlie Packard has written over about 50 years, I reckon. And it was, and Charlie himself played some.
Mm-hmm. Sounding good.
Yeah, he sounded good. And the songs were excellent. It was really nice to hear the songs, his songs, interpreted and played by other musicians. It mm-hmm. added a real dimension to it and made you realize that Charlie is really quite an excellent songwriter.
Yes, and I'm going to have him on my show Between the Notes in July sometime. So. To talk about his career as a songwriter and his process. So
yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it was a very cool event.
Mm-hmm.
And shall we get in today's, our featured pair here, at least for the top half of the show. We're talking with Dan Hall and Jackie Albright. They're with the Sandport Historical Preservation Commission. And I should mention at the bottom of the hour, we're also going to have, we have a second segment. It's going to be with Denison Webb of Soul, and he's going to be talking about the Idaho Gives. It's a statewide event that's happening on Thursday. It encourages people to give to nonprofit organizations, of which Soul is one of them. But we have about, I think, a dozen other local nonprofits that are involved in that this year. It's a great time if you're moved by a charitable impulse to contribute to our local nonprofit event mm-hmm. Groups.
I think Mandy Evans is coming in too.
And Mandy Evans as well, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll look forward to that. But let's get to our guests, Dan Hall and Jackie Albright. Again, welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You have a bunch of stuff. You've been very busy. You have events. So, Chris.
Yeah, there's a big event coming up. It's called Orchids and Onions. And it's actually put on by the State Preservation Idaho Group. So tell us, that's coming into town, I believe, on May 30th. Is that correct?
Yes. You
got the date right there.
Correct.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us, you know, what's that about? And how does our local Sandpoint Historical Commission tie in with this event?
Well, they've asked us, we're not really affiliated, they ask us to facilitate this event for them. Preservation Idaho was a group that started in 1974 in Boise. And it came about in large part after an article in Harper's Magazine in which it stated that Boise, Idaho was in danger of becoming the first city in America that was going to bury itself. And that was a result of their urban renewal program, which was so efficient that it was knocking down everything in sight. And some of the Boiseans that said in the article woke up one day and were standing in parking lots where their childhood used to be. And so that was the basis for forming Preservation Idaho. And it's their task to try and help preserve historical landmarks and buildings in Idaho. And Orchids and Onions started, I think, 3 years after that. I think it's kind of a national program. Although in Spokane, I think they have something called Lilacs and Lemons. And going along with the banquet, they nominate and award different buildings in the state and the people who facilitated the maintenance or the refurbishment of them, orchids. And on the other hand, they award onions to those who destroy history. And
with an insensitive renovation that might cover up a historic building
or just tearing it down.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they actually do that. I mean, they award onions. I haven't ever been to one of their banquets. And in fact, this is the first banquet that they've ever held in North Idaho. Mm-hmm. And every other year it's in Boise and then it's another town. But as a result, probably of nominating last year the Events Center, which won an orchid. They chose to have this year's banquet in the Events Center, and which I think is going to be fun.
Oh, yes.
And so we'll see how that goes. We nominated three, our historical commission nominated three different
venue
facilities. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about those?
Well, we've had the just to fill in or flesh out a little bit more, the historic, the Preservation Idaho has been very, very active in the Sandpoint community. We've had lots of grants from them for the Panada Theater, for, you know, the buildings that we want to see being awarded an orchid. They have helped in some respect on the grants. They did not help, I don't believe, with the depot. And, of course, the Nesbitt House and the Nesbitt Tanner House and the
Heartwood
are private. So
all three of the structures, they're here to give orchids to this year.
Yes, but they haven't necessarily.
Really, weren't necessarily part of the Idaho Preservation Grant.
Correct. But they were helpful in, especially with the depot, direction, how to go, how to apply, where to apply. They were very helpful in that aspect. But I don't believe that they've given us any money for the depot.
So we nominated the three structures, and all three of them won. There's just a total of 11 in Idaho for this year. So that was a pretty good record. And, you know, the commission certainly can't take any credit for the Tanner House, Tanner Nesbitt, as it's called, or the Heartwood Center. That was done privately.
I just wanted to kind of get some context here. You were both appointed as representatives of Sandpoint Historical Preservation Commission.
Correct.
To look at nominating some of our structures here in Sandpoint for this award. And so what is your function in the Sandpoint Historical Preservation Commission, and who appointed you?
Well, we're in the Sandpoint Historic Preservation. The mayors appoint us. So I was appointed by Miller, I think.
You think?
Yeah.
Only you know.
and then reappointed by successive mayors.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was too. So I guess we've been
on
Jackie
it.
Jackie was in before I was, but I guess I've been there at least 12 years now.
And so
you guys are like a piece of history yourself.
Right.
Oh, man.
Right.
I'm telling you.
And our job is to recommend to city council, you know, if they're looking at raising a building, then it's our job to say, to determine the value of the building historically and whether or not that building should be raised or not or changed or just not even put on the register.
So locally you're here to protect the potential destruction of something historical. How many people are on the Sandpoint Historical Preservation Commission?
Well, the full commission is 9. Right now we have 8 on it. Eric Spence had resigned, and I think Brad Granfield, who's an architect, I think he'll be resigning this summer. So we're going to have 2 openings, and we will probably be filling those, although, you know, people are willing to submit their names and need to be a resident of Sandpoint. However, I'm telling you, Chris, talk about history. Oh, man, I got tired 2 weeks ago when I was in City Hall, because Sandpoint had 31 mayors, and I was counting it, and I've known 19 of them personally.
You've been around.
That's almost scary, man. You don't even look like you're 116 years old or whatever.
In my 20s, I didn't think I'd make it to my 30s. So, I mean.
For us, this is a big deal. This is the first time we've ever been involved in an event to celebrate our history. I mean, we've done the centennial, you know, but that was a citywide thing, and we were a part of that.
And then that was in 2001.
One, yes. Correct. And we were, I did walking tours around town, took people around town, and we started at the Sandpoint Depot. But we, as a commission, have not been involved in an event before. So we're, like, really pumped.
Well, maybe with an exception, we put on an event 4 or 5 years ago at Community Hall, which was related to Train Day, National Train Day.
Train Day. Mm-hmm.
And we had the cooperation of the museum and a number of train buffs that, you know, supplied mm-hmm. different historical artifacts and so forth. And we, you know, we were guessing would we get 40 people, maybe something like that. I think we had over 300 that day.
Wow.
I mean, there are the train crazies out there. They love their trains.
Right.
So
yeah.
That was really a fun event. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
another very interesting thing that's happened in the last few years was associated with the bypass construction. Correct. It was an archaeological dig basically, mm-hmm. Along mm-hmm. the route of that. And they came up with quite a few artifacts from early Sandpoint. Now, right. Sandpoint, in original Sandpoint, was all on the east side
correct.
Of the of Sand mm-hmm. Creek along the
right,
peninsula.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that artifact right. exploration was thanks in great part to Nancy Rink, who was a member of the Historical Commission prior to
us. Mm-hmm.
And so she has a lot of credit for initiating the mm-hmm. salvation of the train station, which I think Dave Gunter quoted me in Sunday's paper is 15 years ago being a fait accompli, that it was gone. It was history. The mm-hmm. ITD had a meeting in Community Hall, one of their many meetings, and at that they said, well, there weren't any, you know, the train station was going to be in the way. They didn't have any funds to salvage it. We could move it if we wanted to, or we could have the remaining bricks. They'd save those for us. But it wasn't looking good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't looking good 6 years ago. Every meeting I've been to, I think, in the last 12 years, we've had the train station and its preservation on our agenda. But there wasn't much support from the first couple administrations that, you know, the mayoral that I was with, primarily, I think, because nobody knew where the money would come to restore it. And we have several architects in our commission, and it became pretty evident that moving it was just not going to happen. For one reason, the expense, and number two, it takes it out of its historical site preservation category.
We also had to put it by a railroad for it to maintain its historical integrity.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really, so we were kind of spinning our wheels, and it looked mm-hmm. pretty sad. And then Eric Spence, that energy spark plug, joined our commission, and he has a Sandpoint train station .blog that's quite interesting, and he's a, you know, a historical train buff. And, man, he really activated and was able to find that ITD had to award Amtrak $1 million as a result of the destruction of the train station and the fact that they wouldn't have a depot site. And so it appeared that they were going to use that money to put a tent or something down by Lake Kokalawa.
Exactly. They were talking about actually moving the Amtrak stop outside of town somewhere.
Correct.
Right, to Kokalawa.
Heath Lake.
Somewhere. Some spot that would be more convenient for them,
right.
but not more convenient for anybody that wanted to actually use the train.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. Which would mean that we would lose the only stop in Idaho.
Yeah.
So
with the train.
So the only Amtrak stop in Idaho is here in Sandpoint.
Correct.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that mystery magical $1 million. 900,000 or something.
I want to remind our listeners that this is the KRFY Morning Show with Chris and Susie, and we're talking this morning with Dan Hall and Jackie Albright. They're with the Sandpoint Historical Preservation Commission. It's a part of the city, actually, appointed by the mayor. I wanted to circle back on a point you brought up, Jackie, and that is that one of the functions, probably the prime function of the Historical Preservation Commission is to identify historical buildings that
correct.
Might be in danger of being torn down or remodeled. But those buildings are often in the private sphere, right?
Correct.
So mm-hmm. how do you work with private landowners that might be thinking about taking a historic building down?
We don't have much influence.
we
have very little influence, actually.
You can identify
them. We can identify them.
Mm-hmm. And we don't have any policing powers as such.
Correct.
I mean, it's mostly honorific. And, you know, we try to encourage people in a certain direction.
And it doesn't cost very much, maybe $50 for the registration to put, if you have a home that you feel has historical value, it doesn't take many dollars and it doesn't take much effort to get it onto the historic register, except that you have to have specific or architectural interests that would be detrimental, you know, because like the Panada is very mission orientated and the depot is very Gothic and the Nesbitt House is very Victorian. And so it does have some integrity as well as encompassing the architecture that we have here in Sandpoint that we have been privileged to have. And, you know, how many Victorians do we have? Maybe three?
Yeah, not very many.
Not very many.
It wasn't a real popular building style here, I don't think, as it was like
right.
in Wallace or some other
Correct.
Part of the state.
Mm-hmm.
So how many buildings do we have on the historic register here in town?
Well, we have 9 sites in Sandpoint. There's 19 in Bonner County. There's about, I think, 1,000. I can't remember, 1,000, 2,500. About 1,000 in Idaho.
In the whole state.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if you meet certain criteria, one being that the structure needs to be 50 years old, generally, mm-hmm. and a few other criteria, anyone can nominate themselves or anyone else to be a historical preservation site. But, for instance, if I decide that I think your house should be historical preservation and nominate it, it won't succeed unless it has your cooperation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, you don't have... And it's more of an honorarium, a point of pride. And it doesn't restrict a person from doing anything. That's kind of a myth at some point. I mean, you can knock your house down and there's nothing anyone can do about it. Public's mm-hmm. not invited because you have a, you know, historic place.
Mm-hmm.
It's you just get the right to buy your plaque and put it on.
but it does foster an appreciation for
Correct.
The history
well,
of the structure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And Absolutely. So the commission has actually designated districts. So
we're within town.
Within town.
Okay.
And
right.
then we have those little odd pieces like the Nesbitt House that's mm-hmm. not in an historic district, but has been recognized.
Yeah, we.
Oh, really? Why wouldn't that be a historic district?
Well, because it's only one house. The district it's in is not necessarily of any value as an historic district, yeah, not like 1st and 2nd Avenue right. here in Sandpoint.
Okay, and the Nesbitt House is on, what, 4th Avenue, right?
Fourth.
Yeah.
So the Brown House, the old hospital, is not part of that same district?
And that's already in the historic district.
Yeah, I think we've included that.
Right.
Yeah, there's about
the one at the
six
end
square
of
block area.
1st, mm-hmm. yeah. 2nd.
Now, there's another classification, and that's a historical neighborhood. And currently, Sandpoint doesn't have part of the planning ordinance, although the mayor and a couple of our commission members have come up with an ordinance that we hope to attach to the new planning ordinance. And what this allows is for neighborhoods that want to preserve themselves and protect themselves from commercial encroachment, if they get some sort of unanimity, they can approach the city and say, hey, we want to set up our little historical, residential district.
Neighborhood.
It's a Coeur d'Alene mm-hmm. neighborhood, and such as Coeur d'Alene, I believe, has that. And to that end, our commission has hired a person from Spokane on numerous occasions, Annie Doyen, who's done an incredible job mm-hmm. of sectioning Sandpoint and identifying historical landmarks and stuff. And that, by doing that, that gives, you know, we'll have that for all time, for our history of the town. But it also allows some basis for a neighborhood mm-hmm. to become a historical neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. A lot of great information. Do you have a website people can go to find out more about Sandpoint Historical Preservation Commission?
We're actually
in the process
of building one
okay.
right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be, I think, attached to the city of Sandpoint.
Sure.
I will mention that the Preservation Idaho group, the statewide group that's having the event here, is mm-hmm. at preservationidaho.org.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this event. We have about 5 more minutes. Mm-hmm. And this is big, as you said, Jackie. an event here in Sandpoint with the Preservation Idaho coming in. Mm-hmm. It will take place at the Sandpoint Event Center May 30th. So tell us all about it.
So there's a luncheon along with the award ceremony. The luncheon is $25, and I have to pick up the poster here. And it'll start at noon, and then the award ceremony will take place after that. Then at 2:30, there'll be the grand reopening of the Amtrak depot, as well as self-guided tours, walking tours, from the Sandpoint Depot at 3:30. Also, the night before, on the May 29th, POAC Art Gallery has an exhibit strictly with trains and things to do with engines and maybe just travel, and that's 12 to 3, as well as open in the evening for a champagne get-together about 5.
And is that at the train depot?
It's that's at the POAC Gallery.
Next to the Panada.
Next to the Panada Theatre. So for me, the Nesbitt House, the Tanner Nesbitt House, the Hartwood Centre and the Depot, I'm just puffed up with pride over this. I just think it is absolutely fabulous that we're having this ceremony here. I'm just pleased as punch.
So May 29th is basically the grand opening for the depot, right?
No.
The 30th. That's
is,
the 30th. Okay. Mm-hmm. In advance of the banquet.
Yes.
Okay. Right. Well, the night before, again, POAC, who agreed to put on a mm-hmm. show, solicit artists to exhibit works related to the train station or the trains, will be opening for a second time. They have an opening Friday night, and there's probably 60 exhibits in that. They really did a great job. And on Friday night, on the 29th, POAC again between 5 and 7 is going to have that exhibit opening again. And I noticed that leads right in to your little fundraiser here, which is maybe you should talk about that one. Friday night will be a good night.
Well, Friday night, it's Patchy Sanders and Lindsay Liu coming to the Panada. Two bands, nationally recognized touring bands. In fact, Lindsay Liu is in Europe right now touring in the Netherlands. And they play Celtic folk and bluegrass with sublime harmonies infused throughout their songs. And, of course, I'm telling you like it is. And tickets are available. You can call 265-2992. And this is happening at the Panada on the 29th of May. It's a benefit for KRFY.
Say, I need to mention something before I forget. There's a lot of people that have been involved in everything that's gone on here, but especially Mayor Logan, Carrie Logan. She was the council person assigned to the Historic Commission, and she's the one that really took the ball along with Cody Van Dyke in terms of negotiating with the railroad and ITD, and that was not an easy task, pushing them from no way to what we've gotten today. So mm-hmm. it's really been a neat deal, and we're here to sell tickets. Also, again, you can get them online at Eventbrite. That's Brite and Orchids and Onions, mm-hmm. or POAC next to the Panada. Or at my gallery, the Hollins Gallery, I have some tickets left. And so we would really like to fill this place up.
Yes, and we do have a write-up about the event in the KRFY.org calendars, the Sandpoint Online calendars, and there's a link off to the site to buy tickets at for the event as mm-hmm. well. So everyone's invited.
Everyone's invited. Yeah. Well, everyone's invited to the grand opening of the train station, whether they have a ticket or not, but... For those who come to the banquet, Brad and Linda Scott, who redid the Invent Center, are giving everyone a $40 book on the history of the junior high, high school Invent Center that goes along with it. And if we have time, we will be taking those people that come to the banquet to the train station in advance Tim Bowden, the architect, will be there and tell him a little bit
about that. Spot bus.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good idea.
Spot bus taking people from the event center through and historic district neighborhood to the depot, and then the celebration at the depot. And then the spot bus will take them through to the Nesbitt House, the Tanner Nesbitt House, and back to the event center because there's just very little parking. And I would like to just say that Preservation Idaho basically challenged us, and they said, you won't get 100 people there for lunch on this award. So I would encourage Sandpoint to pay $25 and get there. We want more than 100 people.
How many people are likely to come from out of town because of it's a statewide group?
Well, there may be 10 out from Boise.
Right.
Well, the idea is this is a special occasion. It's something to celebrate our community, and it's all happening on the 30th of May.
29th.
The 29th for the art show and the 30th. And we really appreciate your coming in today. Thank you so much, Jackie Albright and Dan Hall. There's a lot more information that people can find possibly by calling the city.
Well, yes, or Melissa Bethel. Who I should mention. She's in the planning department. And, yeah, she's at 263-3370. And she's really the one that holds our little commission together. Mm-hmm. She's just been a real workhorse. She's been great for us.
So, again, thank you so much for coming in and telling us all about it and really celebrating our community. We're going to leave with a song. It's written by Elizabeth Cotton, and this is performed by Peter, Paul, and Mary. And
but we'll be back in just 3 minutes, we'll be talking with Denson Webb and Mandy Evans about Idaho Gives.
That's right. So this is Freight Train, Peter, Paul, and Mary.
All right. Ooh-wee.
And that was Peter, Paul, and Mary, Freight Train. And you're listening to 88.5 KRFY. And this is The Morning Show with Chris and Susie. We have new guests in the studio. We have Denison Webb from SOL, that's Selkirk Outdoor Leadership Education Group, and Mandy Evans from the Panhandle Animal Shelter. We're not here necessarily to talk about your groups, a little bit, but mostly we're here to talk about Idaho Gives, which is coming up in 2 days. That's May 7th is the big day, isn't it?
It is.
So
what is Idaho Gives? For folks that don't know what it is, and there can be some people listening that don't.
It's a statewide day of giving. It's an opportunity for the state of Idaho to take a moment and recognize the different nonprofits and the good work that they're doing. And I think also honor what really is important to each of us in Idaho, because that's what the nonprofits truly represent.
And so people participate in this basically online. Is that correct? It's all done online?
It can be online if you're doing it through the Idaho Gives website, or any Idaho nonprofit would enjoy receiving a donation that day, I'm sure. It's on May 7th on Thursday, and it's when I say it's a day to honor them, it's a day to make a contribution to your favorite nonprofit.
And this is third or fourth year? How long has Idaho Gives been
happening? Third year.
Yeah. And last year there were a number of Sandpoint nonprofits that were involved. Do you know what the result was last year from the Idaho Gives Day?
For us individually, we did fairly well. It wasn't anything remarkable in terms of actual numbers. It was approximately, I believe, like $1,500. And then we got an additional donation outside of the actual Idaho Gives website for like $500. But the really neat thing for me is basically the Idaho Nonprofit Center actually gathers sponsorships to help underpin Idaho Gives. And as such, they actually have award pools. So someone that makes a $20 donation, they can actually get what's called a golden ticket. So it actually leverages that donation. So SOL actually got a $250 contribution from the Idaho Nonprofit Center out of a $20 donation that somebody did online. So that's kind of neat. So it's like playing the lottery, but for good.
I see. So there are a whole bunch of nonprofits all across the state that are participating in this. And they have put together a pool of money to do these kind of bonus donations.
Correct.
Yeah. So explain a little bit again how the bonus thing works. You call it a golden ticket?
Yeah, there's a few different ways they do it. One of them is what's called a golden ticket, and that's what we received last year. But they do have other award pools, and some of those are based on how large your nonprofit size is. So if you're able to fundraise and to the point where you're at the the top of your bracket, if you will, for lack of better words, then you can also potentially win additional monies from the center. And so it provides a little external motivation, I guess you could say, for those nonprofits to get out there and really encourage their followers to give on during Idaho Gives.
And then the website is idahogives.org, and that's where you're going to be asking people to go online at sometime during the course of the day. Is there a time period, like 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., or do you know?
No, and they can do it right now. You can schedule your contribution by going to www.idahogives.org, and in the upper right-hand corner, it says schedule a donation today.
Okay, so that's, you could take care of it right now. And not
no procrastinating. Come on. You can do it right now.
Do you, if they schedule a donation right now, can you see that your group has got a little bit piling up?
Yeah, we've already received two donations.
Oh, cool.
What? Yeah. Just kidding.
Yeah, early come bird on, gets Andy. The worm. How's the Panhandle Animal Shelter doing?
A little competitive.
I just wanted to back up a minute. Those special awards, you're talking about the golden and the matching, the golden ticket and the matching. $55,000 has been allocated or donated for those special awards. And in yesterday's B, it describes how some of those extra awards happen. And so, yeah, you can get a little bit, have a little bit of fun and encourage your supporters to go out and give. I think if you get 500 donations, you get an extra bit of money. It just is happening all day long.
And I would like that. So if anybody wants to help the Panhandle Animal Shelter reach 500 donations that day, I'm all for it. Let me know how I can help you.
Ditto.
And people can actually give. If you're listening right now, go to idahogives.org and schedule your donation.
You can schedule it right now. You bet. So I was checking the site out here, and last year they raised $782,000 for 660 different nonprofit causes around the state. So that's a significant amount for those nonprofit groups.
It is.
But locally, we have, I think, 13 groups that are involved this year that are signed up. We should probably rattle them off here so people know and they can mark down for their favorites here. The Community Cancer Services, the Idaho Conservation League, SOL, which is the Selkirk Outdoor Leadership
Education.
The Rock Creek Alliance, the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness, the Sandpoint Community Resource Center, the Bonner Community Food Bank, the Hope Memorial Community Center, the American Heritage Wildlife Foundation, the Ponderay Arts Council, the Sandpoint Area Seniors, and the Daybreak Center. Those are actually affiliated, but they're two different groups to donate to, and the Panhandle Animal Shelter. So a lot of great groups to choose from.
And I just want to say that Panhandle Community Radio, that's KRFY right here, did sign up for it, but due to technical difficulties, we are a 501c3 nonprofit, but due to technical difficulties, we got bumped off. But if anyone wants to give to Panhandle Community Radio, you can just go to krfy.org. We have a donation button on the side, too.
And really, it's not just about donating via this website. It is about supporting the nonprofits.
Yes.
And listen, you mentioned last year somebody gave a donation that day as part of Idaho Gives, but they did it offline.
No, they actually – yeah, I got you. Yeah, so somebody contributed monies. Last year, actually, I think they did a little bit different in terms of before the day, you could not pledge your donation. And so they actually gave before actually Idaho Gives started. So this year they shifted that. So now you can actually schedule a donation earlier. Mandy mentioned that. And so anything that was given before last year did not contribute towards it. So.
And we're going to be out all day on Thursday And if people want to come and meet up where we're at, you could easily drop a check off or something if you're not an internet type of person. And
we being Panhandle Animal Shelter.
For any of the nonprofits, that are represented.
Any of those that were mentioned.
And you can, we'll have some paper and paper clips so we can attach your donation and write the organization and keep it and give it to that group the next day.
Yeah. So you're calling these donation stations?
Sure.
For instance, at Evans Brothers Coffee, there's going to be a donation station from 7 to 10 a.m. There'll be one at the Sandpoint Senior Center from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. At Yolks and Super One, we'll have two donation stations going, one at 3 p.m. till 6:30 p.m. at both those locations. Then at Idaho Poor Authority downtown, 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. And at the Hope Memorial Community Center from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. So those are all places people could go to participate, to donate right there, but just to also kind of take part in the thing.
Yeah. I mean, all of our area's nonprofits that are participating will have representatives on hand. Which I, you know, something that is really exciting for me is that this is an opportunity for local nonprofits to get together. Often I think we find ourselves in our own little world, very busy, you know, and underfunded, mind you. and so we're focusing on our work, which is great stuff. And I think that this is an opportunity for us to pause, come together, and actually celebrate the work we are doing and encourage others to come out and do the same, you know, interact with us. Well, we will have a raffle at the Idaho Poor Authority. John's a huge supporter of this event as well, and we'll be doing the whole giving monies back from the CAG towards a group pool, which will actually divvy out to the various nonprofits, and it'll just be a good time.
At these give stations throughout that Chris just mentioned, will there be computers? If I didn't have a computer or a way to give to Idaho Gives, you'd help me facilitate that donation.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. All you would need to complete that would be a credit and or debit card.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We want to make getting money easy.
For you.
Or giving money.
Yes.
Giving money.
Right.
And we should mention these are all 501c3 organizations, which means that most likely your donation is going to be tax deductible, depending on what
And not only that, the benefits of giving to our own community, the animal shelter, an education, outdoor education group such as Soul or Panhandle Animal Shelter or the other ones just is a wonderful thing to. That's what makes Sandpoint so amazing.
We think so.
Yeah, we all do.
Yeah, we joke. I joke about the donations, but really it is. It's about the community, and we wouldn't have the organizations that we have if it weren't for the community that supports us. And I really believe it says a lot about where we live, with the amount of nonprofits we have, and the amount of energy and support that's put into those in order to make a really nice, well-rounded community.
You know, I've always been curious. We have so many nonprofit organizations here. You know, how we stack up like on a per capita basis with a large metro area, it seems like we probably have more nonprofits and probably more donating going on in Sandpoint per capita for the size of our town than most areas do. Have you ever seen any kind of hard statistical information on this?
I haven't, but being at the different fundraisers in town, when a auctioneer comes from a different area at the end, and it's different auctioneers that say it, and they'll say, this was such a wonderful event, and I'll tell you that when I come to Sandpoint, people are more generous in Sandpoint than anywhere else. So Coeur d'Alene, Post Falls, Spokane, Sandpoint just really, I think we care.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully we'll keep it rolling with Idaho Gives on Thursday.
You know, you're both here in the studio and you both represent your own groups. Do you want to say anything, a shout out about what's going on? I know, Dennison, you wanted to have a few moments to talk about what's going on at Soul this coming up season.
Yeah, now that we're in the high season, we're hitting high season for
outdoor
stuff.
You know, it's been weird for us. Actually, our busier season has ended up really turning into winter, but we actually are getting busy again because it's, you know, we're coming up against summer. And so during the summer months, we actually shift gears and we run some outdoor science camps. We actually run some outdoor leadership expeditions for teens. We run a licensed outdoor therapeutic program. So we have a lot of different stuff going on. In addition, we actually are currently working with Lake Ponderea High School on a school improvement grant. And those students are actually doing what's called IDA H2O, which is a water quality monitoring curriculum through in association with the University of Idaho. And it is an evidence-based methodology where the students go out into the field. They collect actually data from local area streams, a chemical test, of habitat assessment, a biological assessment. Then they actually enter that data into a database. And then they'll monitor. So we're doing that on two separate occasions. I'm pretty excited about that as part of a larger project called the Confluence Project, which is also spearheaded by the University of Idaho, which we're hoping to bring to other schools such as Clark Fork High School or other high schools that are actually interested in doing interdisciplinary type of curriculum. So there will be a snow science component, a water quality monitoring component, and then a service learning leadership component.
And what streams are going to be tested?
Well, currently we're actually monitoring Grouse Creek, Rapid Lightning, and then what was the last? Oh, Sand Creek. I had to remember. My brain is chock full. But you can learn more about what we're doing actually if you just jump on our website. And that is SOLE experiences.org and or our Facebook page.
So you have a lot going on. And how important are the donations you get through the Idaho Gives Day to your organization? What does it help cover?
Yeah, tremendous. And actually, if you get on our, everybody has a Razzoo page. So if you go on to the Idaho Gives, just using Soul as the example, you type in the nonprofit name, their own page will pop up. And you can actually see where all the funds are actually earmarked towards. For us, that is actually going directly towards scholarship monies. So 100% towards programming. We're largely volunteer-based. That's what a lot of people do not understand. Actually, I work extensively in volunteer. I'm able to do that. Our local area youth can get out into the woods. But that said, outdoor education, experiential education program is actually quite expensive. So, for example, there's professional liability insurance, transportation expenses, outdoor gear and equipment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Hidden cost. And what about, Mandy, what about the Panhandle Animal Shelter? How important are the funds raised through the Idaho Gives Day to your organization? What are they used for?
Well, then the funds that are raised, we have about half of our budget. We have about a $600,000 budget, and approximately half of that is brought in by the support of the thrift store. But the other $300,000 has to be raised every year, and we're dealing with live animals. We are the only intake facility in Bonner County, and we receive and assist about 1,200 animals a year. So that doesn't change dependent on what we receive financially. And it's neat. We need the support from the community in order to be able to maintain. And then not only that, but we work on programs that help our community. We gave out over 1,200 pounds of free dog and cat food last year to help families. The goal is to keep those pets in the home. We don't want them in the shelter. Let's help people, provide them with temporary assistance and education. We have spay and neuter programs that help people that can't afford to spay and neuter their pet. They can come by the shelter or call us at 208-265-7297 if they need assistance. And you can get your cat neutered for $10. $10 wow. Through this program. Hmm. And then we have youth programs right now where we have a class at the Charter High School, and kids come in and they are evaluating animal behavior and then using their skills to do PR and marketing to market the dogs and cats. So everything that we do is really based on helping animals, but also making sure that we're taking care of the humans that love them and putting them into good, solid homes.
I know one thing that I've noticed going out to the Panhandle Animal Shelter is how kind and generous and caring everyone who works there, volunteers there. It's a wonderful place for students to go and volunteer and learn about how to care and be a kind, giving person.
Absolutely.
So, as you say, it has far-reaching benefits to our community at large.
How big is your staff, Mandy?
23.
Does that include the thrift store?
It does.
And then how many volunteers do you guys work with?
We probably have on average 50 to 100 people that will come by the shelter. But we, frankly, we need more. We have a new volunteer program that's pretty outstanding, a new coordinator. And we welcome dogs. They need to get walked, cats, pet, and brushed. And we also do dog play groups. So the dogs go out. 30 minutes in a play group is equivalent to a two-hour walk. With mental stimulation. Mm-hmm. Shelter environment is not normal, but being outside playing is. We have to try to provide as much normalcy as we can for those animals. You can learn more about the Panhandle Animal Shelter by visiting www.pasidaho.org or our Facebook page.
One quick question. Can somebody impulsively decide, hey, I feel like taking a dog for a walk? Do they have to sign up way in advance if they wanted to just do a short volunteer thing like that?
You know, we, part of the program that we're moving towards is having people actually really be educated on how to do things properly, because the dogs, rather than just taking them, we're trying to teach them how to sit, make eye contact, do loose leash walking. How, if a dog got into a dog fight, would you break up a dog fight? So we're kind of moving away from the model of just having anyone come in whenever they want. There are things that people can do if mm-hmm. they want to just stop by. Mm-hmm. But we're moving towards having a more trained volunteer staff. Okay.
And we have been talking about Idaho Gives, which happens on Thursday. That's May 7th. That's the online giving program, but there's going to be things happening around town as we just rattled off. Do you guys want to give any more shouts out for what is going on Thursday with Idaho Gives?
Yeah, 7 to 10 a.m. we'll be at Evans Brothers Coffee talking about the different nonprofits, collecting donations, and kind of just celebrating. Mm-hmm. We'll also, 10 to 3, you can go by the Sandpoint Senior Center. They have a computer bank where you can come in and make donations. From 3 to 6:30, we'll be at Yokes and Super One. I believe we're also going to be at Winter Ridge for the same purpose, just to talk about what we're doing and promote the nonprofits in our area. And then from 3 to 8, it's the Idaho Poor Authority, where it's kind of the...
local watering hole.
Yes, and the fun for all of us who have been working towards this to come together and celebrate a successful day. And then 5 to 8 is at the Hope Memorial Community Center. They're having a spaghetti feed.
Mm-hmm. A full day. That's May 7th, jam-packed. Thursday.
And people can log on anytime, including mm-hmm. right now, to idahogives.org, and you could make a donation that would be scheduled for the Idaho Gives Day, or you could, of course, wait until Thursday that day to donate online as well.
And one other piece I just wanted to put out there, there is a Facebook page for all of the events, and it's Idaho Gives Bonner County. And if you go on there, you can actually look at those events throughout the day. There's an actual event you can join and share it with your friends, please.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. We want to thank Dennison Webb from SOL, which stands for Selkirk Outdoor Leadership Education. Thank you, Dennison, for coming in and sharing the good news. And Mandy Evans from the Panhandle Animal Shelter. Thank you, Mandy.
Thank you.
It's always nice to have, and you're both welcome back. Just let us know when you want to come back and talk about your organizations. So this is the 88.5 KRFY Morning Show. We just have a few minutes left. We want to remind our listeners that tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, Chris and I will be back in the studio. Chris, you want to talk about what we're going to be doing?
We're going to be talking with the Zone 4 school trustee candidates. Actually, we only have one candidate confirmed to come in, so we're hoping the second candidate will come in as well. The topic, however, will be the school election. We'll be talking about issues related to our Lake Pend Oreille School District, and we'll be talking with the candidates that show up about their positions on these issues so people can get informed to vote in the trustee election. Trustee election is coming May 19th.
And next week, our guests will be, it's Garden Talk, and it will be Emily Levine and Pat Wentworth and myself and Alyssa Wades.
And then that'll be next Tuesday at our regular time. Again, next Wednesday, we're going to have a second edition of the Wednesday morning show with the trustee candidates from Zone 1, both invited.
Sounds good. We're going to have a busy week. This is we're going to leave you with a song by Apache Sanders, who will be at the Panada performing with Lindsay Liu and the Flat Bellies on May 29th. It is a benefit concert for KRFY Panhandle Community Radio. This is Apache Sanders, Mrs. Henry, We hope you have a beautiful day. Bye-bye.